Have you been hitting the books and listening to lectures all day? It's time to relax, to unwind, and listen up. This is Brooke from Campus Chronicles, your go-to podcast for everything student life. No matter where you are in your academic journey, we have you covered. Think of us as a trusted mentor, friend, and confidant who always has your back. We'll be sharing inspiring stories, thought-provoking insights, and practical advice to help you succeed in and out of the classroom. So get ready to be inspired, enlightened, and entertained. I am so excited to introduce you to an absolutely incredible woman. Her name is Carmelita too, but I call her Kat. And we were having the most juicy conversation before we hit record. I said, oh my goodness, we have to jump right in and get all of these golden nuggets that you're sharing. Kat, thank you so much for being here.
Brooke, thank you for having me. And it's so true how we almost had to hit the brakes because I wanted to just keep going and going and going. And thankfully you said, let's hit record. So here we are.
Well, and she has put so much thought, time, intention, and energy, which really describes who she is as a person, into what she is prepared to bring today. So Kat, before we jump into all of your juicy insights, tell us a little bit about you and who you are and how you ended up where you currently are.
Well, the first thing that comes to mind when talking about myself today, at least, is that I am a multi-passionate, multi-hyphenate. So I went to art school, then I went to law school. So I'm now an attorney for creatives as well as coach for high-achieving, impact-driven women. Mostly those who want to kind of manage an aspect of their lives that may be lagging behind, because I'm a huge believer in holistic personal development. So in addition to being an attorney and a coach, I am also a podcaster and a mom of two and a partner to a fellow that finishes, restores and sells vintage motorcycles. It's a lot, but I love it.
Oh my goodness. Well, multi-passionate is perfect. So before we hit record, we were talking a little bit about the immigrant experience. So from your perspective, let's just start diving into that.
Yeah. So I was born in the States. However, my parents both came from the Philippines. My dad's Chinese. His parents actually moved to the Philippines from China. So it's been interesting to have these multiple lenses with which to view my life experience and their experiences. Something that, you know, over the course of time, I've realized both from how they functioned as well as how I've evolved, how much the weight of previous generations or previous cultures can weigh on our decision making without us even realizing it. So even though I was born in the States, given that both of my parents were, you know, lived until their adulthood someplace else, you know, they can't help but infuse that as they came and started raising a family here in, well, I grew up in Wisconsin, in Milwaukee. So it was very different from the Philippines that they left. And you know, it's for anyone who's been in a household or lived in a household or have maybe made the journey themselves from a different culture to this one. And perhaps these experiences are also mirrored in small to big town or big to small town, but the sense of displacement and suddenly feeling like the new normal is offering opportunities and challenges that what you knew isn't or didn't have. It's just a different set of inputs, like making sense of all that and trying to figure out, you know, when I'm making my decisions, I think when everyone makes their decisions, they utilize kind of a toolkit of values and expectations that have been built inside of them. So in my case, you know, I had two very Catholic, very Filipino parents who raised me to think relatively conservatively from a kind of cultural perspective, but were also really wanting me to get the best job I could, the most education I could, and by best job, meaning the highest paying job. So I think a lot of children of immigrants, this resonates. Like, they gave up so much opportunity. They gave up familiarity. They gave up comfort to start over in a place where they thought opportunities for themselves and their kids would be better. And almost as a tribute to that, there's this infusion of expectation that, like, I have to follow through on what their dreams were, what their vision of what they wanted their legacy to be. So when I got to college and, you know, beyond that, making my decisions, whether it was who I dated, the career path I chose, where I lived, et cetera, I would often find myself at odds and kind of conflicted over, like, I want to do this, but my parents want me to do this, and I should do this, but why do I feel like I should do this? So all those questions, you know, especially, I think, I mean, maybe more so to some extent, because it wasn't just about what do I want? It was really factoring in, what do my parents want? What do I represent? Almost to the family, to the culture, the communities that we care for and we identify with. Like there's kind of this broader circle of influence that I think immigrants and children of immigrants sometimes take into account. And that's something that I continue to navigate. There's you know, kind of a process I have to walk through when I find myself struggling with like shoulds and whatnot, and then figuring out, you know, what's authentic to me and what can I stand behind as, you know, this is my legacy and I can be comfortable with this decision and, you know, let the chips fall where they may.
Wow. And I think too, I'm thinking of your story of you being in college. That's such an incredibly heavy weight to carry. Not only carrying your own desires and your dreams for college, but carrying, like you said, your parents' dreams, your parents' desires, and at some points, your culture's desires. Because when you're going to, say, a different country, like you said, a different town, a different demographic area, you do feel this want to be the best representative that you can. And in many cultures and in many places, that's, like you said, get a good job, get married young, you know, do this, do that. There's a checklist mentality versus a feel in intuitive mentality.
Mm-hmm. Very much so. And, you know, when you were referencing like carrying the weight of something bigger, you know, I was the only Asian kid in my elementary school besides my siblings. And in high school, I was maybe one of 8 Asian kids in my high school. So that can reinforce that sense of I need to behave and make decisions in a way that is very intentional, because what people think, not just of me, but of potentially like my people, my culture, my heritage, I might be the only input they have.
And that is a heavy weight, especially of your university and what you're saying about being in the course. You know, if you're the only person of a certain ethnic background in your course, you are going to feel a deep sense of responsibility, not only to your family, but really to the cultural worldview.
Mm-hmm. And it's not, you know, as I say that, I don't want anyone listening to feel like they should take that on, because it's not necessarily a choice. It's sort of, you know, a lot of it is outside of one's own control. Like I know I've been in classes with maybe an individual, an exchange student from a country that I've never been to. And so they are my only touch point for Gambian culture, let's just say. But it's on me to become informed, and it's on me to recognize that they are not the mouthpiece for their entire country or for everyone in their, you know, who identifies as Gambian. So, you know, I also want to make sure not to put added pressure on anyone who might be in a similar situation, because, you know, while the effects of your presence may be interpreted in one way or another, it's also not your job to manage what people think of things that, yeah, it's outside of your control.
Yeah, it's not your burden. And going back to what you said about university, that must have been a deconstruction journey that you're still on today. But when you were in university, thinking back, what did the deconstruction start to look like in terms of starting to follow your own heart, your intuition, your own expectations for your life?
At a very high level, I had to give myself permission to acknowledge, I think in your teens, in your 20s, oftentimes so much comes from a place of rebellion and wanting to shed things that already are familiar and maybe just feel contempt for where you came from. And that's sort of where my headspace was. So I had to really get honest with an acknowledgement of both the good and the bad that of what I, where I came up and how I came up. Because initially, I think there were definitely phases where I felt like I didn't want any of it. But, and I think that's a very natural thing, just in the way that humans evolve and frontal lobe development, et cetera. But giving yourself permission to acknowledge that there's actually a lot of good and there's probably some stuff that you want to leave behind in what you've inherited or what the tool set of values and expectations that you're carrying forward. Because I know that it can be uncomfortable. You know, for me, there was a part of me that felt like I was somehow, by openly admitting that there are things that my parents did or things about my culture that I didn't want to carry forward, it almost felt like I was betraying someone, or it was an indictment that I'm somehow making a blanket statement about this is bad. And realizing, no, everybody's human. Everybody's an individual. What's right to one person is exactly that. It is right to just that individual. And we have to step into that discomfort in a way and be okay with standing for what we know we feel, even if it differs from what we know.
I have a really good friend, and she once said a great analogy. It's reminded me of what you're thinking. She said the grocery bags that you carry of all the stuff you picked up is not who you are. And that's really what I'm hearing you saying is you picked it up from, you know, church. You mentioned church, school, home, activities, wherever it was. And then sitting down, looking at the ingredients you have, is this the ingredients I want to create my life with?
Absolutely. I love that analogy. It's kind of a necessary first step, I think, to figuring out and living authentically. And that's kind of a buzzword these days, authentic, but it does speak to a truth that I'm pretty sure every generation since, you know, the dawn of time has felt some inkling of, which is like we have an intrinsic desire to feel fulfilled. And how we define fulfillment, what fulfillment looks like to us, that's on us to figure out. So yeah, looking at your grocery bags and deciding, is this the meal I want to cook? That's fantastic.
Yes. And I think so many people get this ingredient of I'm not good enough. I'm never enough. I'm not worthy. I think that's an ingredient that so many of us carry. And it's something that I'm hearing as a theme. You know, I'm not good enough, that perhaps I could let down my parents. How did you start to shed that ingredient?
So what helped me, there's a number of things, but the thing that's coming to mind first and foremost is really digging into why do they want this for me? So say my parents wanted, you know, me to have a certain type of husband and at a certain type of lifestyle, looking past the specifics of this kind of person, this kind of household, this many children or this type of life, and distilling that into like, what's actually driving those specifics? They don't, there may not be a ton of evidence that lacking those specifics is bad. It's what they know and what they think is the formula for happiness, what they think is the formula for success, or what they think will make me feel comfortable and lead to a life of less, you know, friction, you know, less heartbreak, etc. So when I was able to really pull back into what's the motivation behind the things that they've given me to carry, sometimes it's coming from a really good place of love and just quote unquote wanting the best for us and not them. They may have their own blind spots around what best for me looks like and how they define best for me. So I was able to kind of release some of that fear or anger and anxiety towards them and towards the decisions I was making when I would depart from, you know, this vision of what it is that they said that they wanted, by reminding myself, like, at the end of the day, whether they know it or not, or whether they've acknowledged it or not, they want me to be happy. They don't want me to be miserable and in a job I hate, or miserable and in a marriage that with a person I despise. At the end of the day, if I'm happy and I can show them that I'm happy and healthy and living a good life, they really can't, they'll have a hard time saying that's a poor outcome. You know, so kind of reassuring myself that, you know, let's really go back to what's most important here. Because I don't think any parent, or at least 99% of the parents out there would rather have a happy and healthy kid, even if it looks like it nothing they imagined for them, versus an unhappy and an unhealthy kid that checks all the boxes. So I think remembering that and sometimes reminding our parents of that is a huge step.
That brings us to an important point too, because I remember thinking back, especially in my first year of university, and I would get frustrated with the things that my mom would ask or suggest for me to do, whether it was socially, emotionally, physically, or mentally. And I would think, oh my goodness, she doesn't know what she's talking about. I'm going to do it this way and this way. And looking back in retrospect, she really was right in so many different situations, but it's very hard to put your pride aside and your ego aside and listen to the input from your parents, because our first reaction there is to be triggered. Well, I'm an adult. I know what's best. I know how to select friends or romantic partners or whatever it is. But like you said, with the 99% of parents listening, leaning back in, tuning back into, well, why do you say that? Being curious enough to ask them the question.
Yes. It's so funny you mentioned that trigger mechanism or the defense mechanism, or noticing that about yourself and having the wisdom to your point, be able to kind of set it aside and come from a place of curiosity is so important, not just in dealing with your parents, but as a life skill, navigating life. So I have an eighth grader and a seventh grader right now, and they are very much in a place of feeling like it's imperative to fight every battle. Like if they feel they are right, they stand up for what they believe in. And I think it's amazing. And at the same time, there are instances where, and like, it's like, okay, this person accidentally cut in front of you in line. It's okay. Like, I don't think they did it on purpose. Let's just give them the grace to, maybe they're in more of a hurry, you know, something like that. So there's a delicate dance throughout life of deciding when to pick your battles and accepting the most positive interpretation of a situation. This is a little bit kind of going to life navigation skills, but something that definitely I think allows for that place of curiosity and digging into the why is, you know, recognizing or assuming positive intent when someone is offering solutions, offering critiques, maybe data points that may be uncomfortable, but let's assume for a moment that they're coming. This is coming from a good place. What is that good place? And can I hear it for what it is, acknowledging it for that? So in the instance of our parents, you know, when our mom tells us that skirt's too short, or, you know, why are you going out in that?
We've all from our mother, yes. Haven't we?
Yes. You know, thinking through, like, it's not, they're not saying I'm a bad decision maker. They're not saying I hate your clothes, maybe, you know, but this is coming from a place of probably protectionism, probably a desire to keep you safe, because that comes from a place of love. Like, they cherish you. They don't want you to run into situations that might put you in a bad place. So, you know, that's thinking, doing that curious digging into where does this come from? Why are they saying this? And being kind of a big person and looking at it for that, as opposed to maybe that initial gut reaction of like, stop, just stop what you're saying. I know what I'm doing. All that.
If there was one thing I feel that you'd be similar that I could change about my, especially my first year of university, is listening to my mom when her gut intuition was wrong about particularly a relationship or someone of that nature. Now, we're not saying to override your own intuition with your parents ever. Of course, that's incredibly important. But taking their input, assuming that you have a loving relationship, as valuable, is so important. Because even though you are an adult, adults have trusted people in their lives that they look to for advice and fellowship and mentorship. And doing it alone does not make you a successful adult.
Mm-hmm. That's a really good point, Brooke. And I think it's something that our culture sometimes, or I should say like Western culture or maybe American society, undervalues, is tapping into the wisdom of people who came before you and the networks that might exist outside of your immediate frame of experience and reference. I know that I myself was like, I'm going to do everything on my own. And somehow listening to people's advice or leaning on people could feel like it made me less than somehow. But yeah, in many other cultures, our elders are revered and there's so much knowledge that they have to impart, and the kind of distillation of the information that people who've been there before you can share hits in a different way. So yeah, in following up on what you were saying, I feel like if you are in a position where maybe you're wondering, like you want to lean into, or maybe there's people in your life that are willing to provide you with advice and support, there's no shame in letting that in. And in fact, if you're looking for validation, there's many other cultures, I'd say most other cultures that aren't like Eurocentric, kind of have this idea or the embrace this framework of a broader sense of support. I don't know. I haven't totally diagnosed and researched that notion, but from personal experience, I feel like that's the case.
Mm-hmm. And I wanted to note too, it doesn't have to be always your parents. Different areas of your life, you might seek support from different people. So it could be a trusted professor. It could be a counselor. It could be a coach. It could be a friend who's 3 years older, a friend who's 3 years younger. It could be anyone.
Yes, yes. And I heard the saying once, it was one of these laundry lists of things that you should aspire towards in life. And one of them was have a friend in every generation. And I remember thinking like, why would you want that? But to your point of it could be anyone, but just the mere fact that they've lived through different things than you can give them a sense of perspective and wisdom that we would be, you know, we would benefit from embracing and picking up on.
I'll tell you, I don't know if you know this about me. When I competed in pageants, that was actually my platform, was the cultivation of multi-generational friendships. It's so important to our development, whether you, in a safe space, spend time with a young child who can give you that sense of joy, or whether you're spending time with someone elderly who can really tell you about their lived in experiences, what they felt, how they navigated, how they moved to get over those struggles. It's incredibly important.
Oh, I love that. I love that. It makes me think about, you know, the reason that reading can be so beneficial is it opens doors to different worlds, and you know, you can see perspectives and learn things from someone else's eyes. And similarly, I hadn't thought of this before, but those multi-generational relationships offer you a similar, if not deeper, level of insight and awareness and kind of reframing things that, you know, it can be hard to find if you're only dealing with your peers and only, you know, kind of willing to consider perspectives from those in your immediate vicinity. That's really neat, that multi-generational aspect.
You know, considering back to our pre-chat, it's gone so different than expected.
I agree. It's sort of evolved in a way, a completely unexpected way. I had little notes and I think I completely went off script, but I love it. And I have to say it's been way more thought-provoking than I anticipated. So I appreciate that. I always love an opportunity to reflect and be asked good, insightful questions. So thank you, Brooke.
I've had such an incredible time too. If somebody wants to connect with you, Kat has a podcast where she says all sorts of incredible and insightful things. You might want to go take a listen. Where can they connect with you?
Yes. So I actually have two podcasts now. One is called Know Them, Be Them, Raise Them. And it's aimed at moms, particularly moms of girls. Because as anyone who has been a daughter or has daughters knows, there can be friction between what moms think daughters should do and how daughters think moms should act. There's another podcast called The Coaches In. A colleague of mine and I started it very recently, but speaking to life's challenges, but from the perspective of immigrants and first generation and second generation individuals, and how, you know, how do we balance everything, and how are things, you know, how does it showing up in the workplace? We have to contend with a different set of, you know, challenges perhaps than others. So navigating life's ups and downs with kind of centering the immigrant and children of immigrants perspective. And if anybody's interested in connecting, I'm always open to chatting. I also do one-on-one coaching. And as you heard earlier, I am an attorney for creatives. So yeah, anyone who wants to reach out, my website's Carmelita2, that's CarmelitaTiu.com.
Carmelita, thank you so much for being here. I've had so much fun with you, as I anticipated. And thank you for sharing all these just incredible insights with our people. I know they're going to be so appreciative.
Thank you, Brooke. Thank you for making this space, and it's always lovely to chat.
Thank you for joining me on Campus Chronicles. I hope you found our discussion informative, inspiring, entertaining, and fun. We are always working hard to make sure that our episodes are the very best they can be, which means we need your help. If you liked what you heard, remember to hit the follow button on your favorite podcast platform and drop us a review. It helps us to connect with more students who are hungry for success. And remember, the journey never stops. Keep listening, keep learning, keep growing. See you next week for another amazing episode of Campus Chronicles.